Second Kings 6, that should be page 312. You want to use the Pew Bible there? Have a shorter passage this evening than we have typically taken with Kings. We could have done the same, of course, with this passage. But I really wanted us to see, feel the weight next week of this particular passage where the Lord prays, or Elisha prays for his servant to have his eyes open. A good reminder for us always, and this week even, in something that doesn't seem as significant, to remind us of God's care in those smaller moments in life. So let's stand, if you're able. 2 Kings chapter 6, we'll read there those first seven verses. Again, this is the word of the Lord. Now the sons of the prophets said to Elisha, "See the place where we dwell under your charge is, see the place where we dwell under your charge is too small for us. Let us go to the Jordan, and each of us get there a log, and let us make a place for us to dwell there." And he answered, "Go." Then one of them said, "Be pleased to go with your servants." And he answered, "I will go." So he went with them. And when they came to the Jordan, they cut down trees. But as one was felling a log, his axe head fell into the water, and he cried out, "Alas, my master, it was borrowed." And the man of God said, "Where did it fall?" When he showed him the place, he cut off a stick and threw it in there and made the iron float. And he said, "Take it up." So he reached out his hand and took it. Thus far the reading of God's word. You can be seated. There is no question, just as we've seen, the Lord did many great things through the ministry of the prophet Elisha. We've seen some of those great things recently. We'll see more of them as we continue to move on through the book and through this chapter in particular. Some of those things, yes, they were miraculous, but some of those things were much smaller than other things. Especially as we consider the grand scheme of things. We've noted this a little bit, the difference, for instance, between Elisha being present with the three kings who went up to Moab in chapter 3, and then him ministering to a widow in the next chapter, and also the Shunammite family, whom God gave a son. Some things were larger on the grand in the grand scheme of things. It would seem some things were much smaller, and this is one of those smaller occasions. But even in those smaller occasions, the Lord continued to demonstrate his power, but not only his power, but also his care for his people in all of their circumstances. I told you recently of the little show that, even though it's on break, I guess, in between seasons now, that my daughter enjoys watching, All Creatures Great and Small. Well, the opening of 2 Kings 6 reminds us that the Lord is interested in his people, and we might say he's interested in all their problems, great and small. There is here a concern that arises, and that concern is, though it may seem small to us, was not insignificant to the man, and the Lord was concerned. And so there is a problem that arises, and it's met with care from the Lord. And so my prayer tonight is that the Lord would use this passage in just that way to reassure us of his care for us in all of our concerns. And so very simply, we have the concern, a representative concern of God's people, and then the care of God for his people. The concern of God's people and the care of God for his people represented in this man in the lost axe. So verses 1 to 5, the outline is a bit out of proportion, but 1 through 5, the concern of God's people. Then we'll see in 6 and 7, the care of God for his people. So let's see the concern here first of all. Verse 1, once again we meet the sons of the prophets. If you haven't been, I think everyone has, but if you haven't been with us in recent weeks, we've referred to the sons of the prophets as we've encountered them as a sort of old covenant seminary. It was sort of a college, it appeared, made up of men who were learning from the prophets. For instance, we see In chapter 4, we find them at Gilgal, and those men were sitting at the feet of Elisha and learning from him there. We've seen three locations. Gilgal was one, Jericho was another, and Bethel is another. And so here we are at this particular location. We're not told in chapter 6. The last place we found them was at Gilgal. Perhaps they were there again. But we find a problem arises, and that problem is, as verse 1 says, they say to Elijah that their dwelling place is too small. And so it was really a good problem to have. They've outgrown their living quarters. You think of a church outgrowing their building. It is a problem. It needs to be addressed, but it's a good problem to have. And so is this. It indicates life and growth, indicates the Lord is adding to their numbers, and it was a problem nonetheless. So they ask Elisha if they can go and really chop down some wood. Each man, not something elaborate. They're not like Solomon, who seeks the cedars from Lebanon, but just enough to meet their growing needs. Each man a log, cut down a tree, and so they'll be able to meet their growing needs. I've experienced this, as some of you I'm sure have as well, but experienced something like this in my own home, when not only adding children grows your family in number, but then those children begin to grow in stature. And so you go from a home with two adults and a couple of babies or toddlers or small children to now we have what seems to be the people who are the size of four adults along with children. And so at times we know what it's like when the children grow. Our living spaces seem as though they are shrinking. Well, Elisha agrees they should do this. And also they ask him to go with them. And this really is the mark of wisdom, to take for them to take God's prophet with them at this time. They were planning, not only planning, that is important, but they submit themselves to wisdom and godly counsel by going to Elisha. And they also, by asking him to go along with them, they want that wise counsel available to them as they carry out these plans. Proverbs 13:20 says, "Whoever walks with the wise will be wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm." Wisdom doesn't lean on its own understanding. Wisdom, the way of wisdom, is opposite of the way of the rugged individualist. It doesn't seek to just depend upon its own self and isolate its own self, thinking that I know best by myself. Wisdom also doesn't seek the counsel of those who merely will give the nod of approval, the rubber stamp, the affirmation to my preconceived my answers that I've already have made up in my mind. That's not the way of wisdom. But wisdom seeks other wisdom. It seeks godly counsel. And so we have a mark of wisdom here. But there they are, chopping wood in verse 4. And this is where the problem occurs. One man's axe, or maybe it was, as it's spoken of here, is the handle, or the head. Maybe it came loose from the handle. Whatever was the case, somehow the axe, the iron, ends up in the water in the Jordan River. And so to complicate the problem, as though that weren't bad enough, we find out that this axe head did not actually belong to the man who was using it. It was a borrowed axe. Now for us, this might seem like a small thing, especially even in the text, right? As we look back to the matters I mentioned earlier, those matters of national and even international significance that we've encountered thus far. But again, at this moment, in this man's life, this was the central issue. The axe that he's borrowed from someone else, he's lost. We might think, well, okay, we'll run down to Lowe's or Home Depot and we'll pick out another axe and we'll be able to replace it. Of course, that wasn't it wasn't that simple. Tools were, like this, were very valuable. They were harder to come by, and not only were they not as easily replaced, the fact that the man had to borrow it demonstrates or maybe suggests that he was not himself able to afford a replacement for it. So at this time in this man's life, it is the central issue. It's been often the case for us, hasn't it? Maybe there are larger problems in the world, but we are faced with a certain dilemma, an urgent thing that may not be so big, but at the moment, it certainly takes our attention. A few years ago, I was pressure washing the manse when we live next door, and living under those oaks, things kind of get caked on after a while. Problem was, I didn't have a pressure washer, and so I borrowed one from my brother, but it had been a long time since it had been washed, and so that one just wasn't cutting it. So my father-in-law brought a pressure washer over, and that was doing the job much better. And just as a side note, I don't like to borrow things for a number of reasons, and to a fault, sometimes when I should. My father-in-law is happy to lend his tools, but I sort of think, just personally, when people have spent like hundreds of dollars on a piece of equipment, it seems odd that I would use it for at no charge. I don't think the same of other people that I would lend things to, but it probably has something to do with also. I don't want to end up like the man here that we've just read about. I don't want to be the one who's lost the axe head in the water. Well, I borrowed the pressure washer from my father-in-law, and he was showing me all the tricks and all that it would do. And he said he's very careful to keep up with things and to care for things. And he had a little bag of the tips that you can exchange at the end of the wand. And he said, don't lose these. If you need to change one out, take the old one, put it back in the bag, or put it in your pocket. Just don't set it down somewhere, because you'll walk off and leave it, and maybe not know. Maybe it'll get covered up with some leaves or dirt or something. And so don't set it down. So I was really careful to follow his instructions. But when I went to change out one of the tips, I put the other one in, and I didn't insert it all the way, so it wasn't fully locked. And so I went to fire up the hose again. When I did, it shot the tip way up into the air and across. Some of you seem to maybe Ray's done this before, or at least know someone who has. It goes up into the air, it goes across the yard, and it lands somewhere. I have no idea where it's at. And so so here I am. The one thing I didn't want to happen has happened. I don't like to borrow things to begin with. I'm afraid I'm going to lose something, and I've lost the axe head, so to speak. It's on the ground somewhere. And I don't know where it is. The other part of the problem was I needed that tip to finish the job. And so it happened that the boys were around that day. They had a friend with them as well. And so I offered $10 to the first young man who could find this tip. And for me, it was well worth it. It saved me some searching time. It also saved me what may have been potentially driving around town trying to find a replacement. So we can kind of sense the man here is needing to replace this or not being able to return what he has borrowed. And part of loving our neighbor is that concern. It is to be concerned with the possessions of others, especially if they have lended them to us. It's an understood common courtesy. We return things the way that we've borrowed them. We treat them as though they were our own while they're in our possession. If you're prone to neglect, then you need to treat them then even better than your own things. But concern for the belongings of others, returning things in a timely manner, not being the type of person who has to be tracked down if the person who is lent to you is ever going to see what they let you borrow again, or returning a vehicle. Not being on an empty tank, repairing things that were broken while they were in our possession, those things we ought to be concerned about. And so the man was right to be concerned that it was a borrowed axe head that he had lost. But of course, sometimes things are out of our control. Things like this do happen, whether it's borrowed things or just in the course of our lives. You all know what it's like to be in a rush in the morning to head out and to find that your tire is flat, or even on the way to church, or that the battery in the car is dead, or to find out it's during a storm, isn't it? When you find out that your roof is leaking, and even though it may be an easy enough fix at the moment. It has your mind's attention. The air condition goes out in the church with no time for repair before the next Sunday service. Of course, I don't have to keep going with a list, right? You could provide your own, and probably, likely, provide your own even from things that have happened, the events from this past week. Sometimes the things are small. Sometimes we're faced with tragedy, incredibly painful suffering. And again, it can be at other times just the smaller frustrations. But even those small things, what we need to be reminded of here is that even those small things aren't lost on the Lord, that He really does care about the whole host of the problems, great and small. Just as He was, as we'll see, He was caring for this man with the borrowed but now sunken and lost axe. So we've seen the concern of God's people represented here in the man and the lost axe. Well, now as we move on in these last couple of verses, verses 6 and 7, we see the care of God for His people represented in the recovery of the axe. Now, if you remember back a moment ago, as they set out, they sought Elisha for his counsel. Well, in the same way, we find this man in verse 5 going to Elisha once again, and he says, "Alas, my master, it was borrowed." So he does again. He just as they sought the man of God before, so they seek him. So this man seeks him now. In other words, he's going to the right place. He's going to Elisha. This is the man who is speaking God's word. This is the instrument through whom the Lord had worked previously to minister to His people. And again, the Lord is going to use Elisha. And so this is what he does. He throws a stick in the water, just as he did at Jericho. He put the salt in the water that caused it to, the water was bad and caused it to be good. In chapter 4, we saw the death in the pot, right? The stew was not edible, and so they put the flour in and healed it, made it better. And so here again, he throws a stick in the water and near where the axe head had fallen, and what happens but that the iron did swim. It floated. It rose from the bottom to the surface and was recovered. We spoke a moment ago about the things that happen in life, inevitably, whether it's with borrowed things or whether it's just the frustrations that we face. The same is true with the use of tools. There's things like this are going to happen. Anything that if we are using things for their intended productivity, there is the inevitability of things like this happening. Think of Proverbs 14:4, where there are no oxen, the manger is clean. That sounds great, doesn't it? You have to clean up after them. But abundant crops come by the strength of the ox. So if there is going to be usefulness, there is going to come with it the frustrations or the maintenance or the necessary cleanup. And so being productive means that when we use those things, there is that use, there is the work, there is the wear and tear, there is the cleanup, there is the maintenance. Someone once told me that he and his wife didn't want to have any more children because they didn't want really to take care of there was enough of a mess that the children that they had left behind. They didn't want to have to clean up after them anymore. If the proverb applies to the barn, I think it also applies to the house, that where there are no children, maybe the living room is clean or the kitchen is clean. But building Christian homes and societies usually comes, ordinarily comes, by raising covenant children. So unless you leave your tools on the shelf, unless things are for display only, these are the things that are going to happen. This week, my family was able to spend some time at the lake. I wasn't able to go until late Friday night, and then spend a little time with them Saturday, really just helping them get stuff. I came for the worst part of the vacation, the cleanup, just to come back. But they were there, and the boys did a little fishing, and Carson told me he was in the lake fishing off the paddleboard, and he's sitting there, and he turns around, and he finds that his rod and reel has disappeared. It has gone into the lake somewhere. And he doesn't know where it's at. He just knows it's in this general area. To make it worse, it was a brand new Rod and Reel. It was a birthday gift that his grandfather, my dad, had given to him. And so Carson recruits his brothers for help. The boys, they didn't take a stick and throw it in the water, right? Like Elisha here. No, but they dove in after it. And they searched and searched, and finally they were able to find it. But as Carson told me, I don't think I told Carson this story yet. If he's watching at home on the live stream, then he'll hear it maybe for the first time, or maybe I'll tell it. If he's not, I'll tell it to him when he gets home, I think my dad would understand how this could happen. Once he was fishing out on the Florida Georgia line of the St. Mary's River where I grew up, and he had, I think it was a new rod and reel of his own in the boat, and he had set it down. The hook was baited and in the water, and he turned around and he got a bite. And you can probably guess what is about to happen in the story, or what happened. The fish hit his line and then took the whole rod and reel in the water. It was gone. But his cousin was fishing with him that day, and a few minutes later, his cousin got a bite. And so his cousin reeled in the fish, and when he got it to him, lo and behold, it had another bait in another hook in its lip that was attached to a line. As they followed the line, sure enough, they were able to recover my dad's rod and reel that he had lost a little earlier. Now, those recoveries, right, or those are the sorts of things that happen when you use tools, right, or when you're using an axe head. Things like this happen. And so these recoveries, right, Carson's and my dad's, they were ordinary, natural. The second one seems a little more miraculous than the first, but neither of them are miracles in the biblical sense of the word. The Lord used a search team of Carson's brothers. The Lord used another fish who was still hungry and went for another bait in order to recover his pole. And so the Lord is most often pleased to work in this way through natural means. And we ought to give thanks to the Lord as he uses ordinary means as a way of caring for us. The aspirin that makes the headache go away, we can give thanks to God for that means. It is the Lord's work. The mechanic who fixes our vehicle, or the fish, again, who takes another bite, or the brothers who are willing to go to the bottom of the lake and find our lost possession. But here, this is not a natural means. This recovery of the axe head was supernatural. When I read this passage, I thought this week, I wonder why they just didn't kind of wade into the river there and maybe feel around with their feet and try to find the iron. Maybe they could have recovered it in that way. We certainly wouldn't have this miracle, though, would we, to be reflecting on. What we find here, though, is that the Lord is caring for his people in a way that, yes, he often uses natural things and ordinary means in the way that they typically work. But the same God who has put into creation the law of nature, right, who's created the natural order of things, and who typically works according to the laws of nature, is at the same time not limited to the laws of nature that he has created. And so, as he so often does, he often works in accordance with them and with them as a means. But if he so wills, he can and does work against them, or even contrary, we find at times, to the very order that he has made. In other words, iron doesn't float, but it did here, because the Lord was demonstrating his power, but also his care for one of his own. It's a representative care of all of his people. As we prepare to close this evening, I was thinking of these smaller events and these smaller struggles and things that we face in life. And I was reminded of just after Kristen and I moved back to the area from North Carolina, where we began our marriage, where we had our older boys, and we were visiting, having dinner in the home of a PCA pastor. So this was maybe 12, 13 years ago. And we were really, really going through a tough time financially. We just didn't have anything. and it was tough. The move back had wiped us out. It was during 2008, that summer. So this was when gas was so high. It was really just a real struggle for us. We're trying to get back on our feet, and we were discussing with this pastor and his wife after dinner. The kids had kind of run along. We were discussing some of these problems, these issues that we were facing. But it just seemed that we were kind of dwelling on it, and too much. I was beginning to get a little uncomfortable by just kind of sharing all that we were facing, and felt that it was complaining a bit. And so I didn't want to make too much of what we were facing. And so I made the comment to the effect that though what we were facing was difficult, it didn't compare to how other people were suffering. And this was true. I was thinking of really large things, significant, troubling, devastating, tragic things. But the pastor in whose home we were in that night cautioned me. I thought I was making too much of our suffering. He cautioned me not to make too little of our suffering. Because what we were going through, not to brush it off because it wasn't something big like persecution or martyrdom, but to realize and encourage me in this way that the Lord had sovereignly tailored our situation to us, to our home, and to our family. No, we couldn't control all the things that we faced, but the Lord tailored this, no matter how big or how small, for our good, and he wanted us to look to him in it. With the big things, we are to look to the Lord, but also with the little things. The lost axe head, we're to look to him as well. So the God, as we have seen in the early part of Kings, in chapter 4 especially, the God who raised the dead child of the Shunammite woman, he's the same God who raised this axe head for one of the sons of the prophets. Because the God who cared for the Shunammite woman also cared for this man here. And that's true for you as well, as one of God's own people, one of his own children. To know that the Lord cares about the great, he cares about the small, he cares about the big problems, he cares about the little problems. And Elisha's ministry really gives us a sample of the breadth of life in a fallen world. We've seen starving families. We've seen children claimed by death. And now we've seen a lost axe. It seems to pale in comparison to the others. But as those other problems might remind us that no problem is too big for his power, a problem like this reminds us that no problem is too small for our Lord's tender care. He raises children from the dead. He raises axe heads from the bottom of rivers. He can raise the stony hearts of those we love when they seem to be sunk and stuck. And he can raise your head when it's downcast as well. All problems, great and small, the Lord cares for his people in them all. Let us pray.